We're continuing today with King Ahab and Jezebel, Part 2. I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. In the first part of our short series that we're going to be doing, actually, this is going to be about seven parts on King Ahab and Jezebel. In our first part, we introduced the situation that ultimately leads up to Elijah and the contest at Mount Carmel between the prophets of Baal and God himself. Of course, it wasn't much of a contest. I know that you're familiar with the story. We spoke of some of the history that eventually led to Ahab becoming king over Israel. Ahab's reign as king can literally be summed up in one verse found in 1 Kings 16:30, which says this, "And Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of the Lord above all that were before him," unquote. Notice the verse tells us that Ahab was so bad that what he did alone, all by himself, was far above all those together who came before him as kings. Now, that's saying a great deal. We have politicians alive today who seem to have no qualms about doing anything that is illegal. But Ahab is proof that this type of person is not unique to modern history. Corruption, greed, and abject evil have its roots in the pages of history from long ago. Pastor and author Richard Strauss has this to say about Ahab. Ahab had the dubious distinction of being the most wicked king who reigned over Israel up until his day. We expect almost anything from a man that degenerate and are not surprised to read, and it came about as though it had been a trivial thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he married Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and went to serve Baal and worshipped him, unquote. And that's 1 Kings 16:31. Referencing that. For Ahab, doing what was evil for his own selfish gain was par for the course. Whatever self-aggrandizing methods he could use to further his own political career were by no means beneath him. You have to wonder, how does a person like that become king over Israel, no less? Now, marrying Jezebel was likely done to create some form of an alliance between Israel's northern kingdom, over which Ahab ruled, and the Phoenicians, or the Sidonians, as it states in the text. With the ever-present menace of Syria and the growing threat of Assyria, Ahab decided that he needed an alliance with his neighboring nation, so he made a treaty with the king of Phoenicia and sealed it by marrying his daughter. That's how Jezebel happened to move to Samaria, the capital of Israel. And there is only one way to describe it. A whirlwind hit Israel. Now, by the way, just to refresh your memory, Samaria here is the capital of Israel because this is after the split when Jerusalem remained with the southern kingdom, or Judah. And so Israel created a new capital for themselves after the split, since Jerusalem was no longer in their territory, and that capital was Samaria. Now, unfortunately, this too often is what it is about for many kings of Israel's northern kingdom, and at times for the southern kingdom of Judah as well. Instead of trusting the Lord to protect and lead, too many kings took it upon themselves to enter into alliances with other nations by marrying kings or dignitaries' daughters, which, of course, they felt would safeguard them against attack from that other nation. It also put them in the position of another nation having their back in case an attack came from another region. Surely we can see how this lack of faith by Ahab and other kings created issues for God-fearing Israelites living in Israel, as well as Judah. Now, once Jezebel married Ahab and moved to Samaria, things there began to change drastically, and not for the better. In today's terms, this would be like a Christian marrying a devout Muslim. While Muslims might believe they worship the same deity that Christians worship, we know from Scripture that this is not true at all. Muslims have a form of worship, and those Muslims who are dedicated to Allah live their lives according to His perceived rules. many of which are diametrically opposed to the rules of Christianity. True Christians live their lives according to the biblical standards within God's word, and for any true Christian to enter into a marriage with a true Muslim, it's simply asking for trouble. Now, in Ahab's case, he didn't care, as the text tells us, because of his political ambitions. He married Jezebel and let her worry about the worship of deities because it was not important to him. To Jezebel, the worship of her deities was taken very seriously. Jezebel had grown up steeped in the worship of Baal and his female consort, Astarte or Ashtoreth. Baal was considered to be the god of the land. He owned it, they said, and he controlled its weather and the increase of its crops and cattle. Ashtoreth was considered to be the mother goddess of fertility. Now, it may have been that King Ahab, to keep up appearances, continued to form some outward display of worship of Jehovah. Maybe he went through the motions. There was virtually nothing sincere, though, about what he attempted to outwardly portray. And that's all too common among leaders today, political, and sometimes, unfortunately, even in the religious realm. They go through the motions of worship, usually for photo ops, but in reality, it means little to nothing to them. It's all for show. And that was certainly the case with King Ahab. It wasn't long before Jezebel began to make her mark on Israel through her insistence on having her way when it came to worship of Baal. Satan often does this by using people with overpowering personalities to foist his will on humanity. Think of the many dictators this world has seen and experienced throughout history that bear this out. It proves it. Now, Jezebel, according to historians, was fanatical about her religion. The worship of Jehovah must have seemed dull and commonplace by comparison, and she was determined to change it. She was a very headstrong, self-willed, domineering woman, and with a moral weakling for a husband, she had little trouble getting her way. She got him to, for instance, build a house for Baal inside or beside the palace in Samaria, as well as an Ashtoreth, that is, an idol of the fertility goddess. It's important to remember that from the beginning, Satan had it out for Israel. He didn't want Satan created. He did everything he could to keep that from happening. And he did his level best to cut that nation down before it was even formed, when the young patriarchs tried to kill the second youngest son, Joseph. And you can read about that from Genesis 37 to 50. It's likely that Satan understood that this peculiar nation, specifically created by God himself, like no other nation before or since, would ultimately have supreme importance in God's plan. Satan also understood from Genesis 3 that a redeemer would eventually come to free people from Satan's grasp. Now, of course, we know this occurred with Jesus, who sprang from the root of Jesse, Romans 15:12, and from the tribe of Judah. It goes without saying, then, that once Satan grasped the reality of Israel's purpose, he would do everything he could to stop it from being created. If he couldn't stop it there, he would stop it from moving on. And though he tried on many occasions to destroy Israel and, of course, Jesus, he ultimately failed. This even in spite of those who would use their free will to side with him against Jehovah. That speaks to God's sovereignty. Now, such was King Ahab, who possibly without realizing it, but being just as culpable, by the way, ended up siding with Satan. And because of the overbearing personality of Jezebel, Ahab continually wound up opposing God's purposes. Because of this, and as is usually the case, Jezebel didn't stop at simply ensuring the worship of Baal was established throughout Israel. Eventually, she wanted to completely stamp out the worship of Jehovah. And this is what's happening today, by the way, in America. It is happening with the left, and incredibly, they're using Islam to help accomplish their goals. It seems totally incongruous until you stop to consider that both the left and Islam are completely opposed to Christianity. We are their common enemy. Now, even though the left is also opposed to much of Islam, but refuses to admit it right now, and they ignore the atrocities committed by those within Islam. You know, I tend to roll my eyes whenever I see one of those bumper stickers that spells out the word coexist. I'm sure you've seen them. While it seems like something most people would want, the folks who sport those on the back of their cars are simply proving how little they understand about each of those religions. For instance, if they really understood Christianity, they would know that Christians believe there is no God but Jehovah. That's the main tenet. Islam says the same thing about their God, Allah. The two gods are not the same. Now, while Muslim may argue that the word Allah is simply the Arabic word for God, don't be fooled, because that is the name they use when they pray to their false God. Nonetheless, the tenets of Christianity and Islam are not compatible. They cannot coexist. One must take over and push out the other. Now, while Christians can put up with other false religions and not necessarily want them eradicated, we know, by the way, when Jesus physically returns, he's going to take care of that. People from Islam only appear, and that's the main point here, they only appear to be so generous in the beginning. And then when they have a large enough numbers of other Muslims that make up a community of Islamic believers like they do in Dearborn, Michigan and other places, they will start to make demands. Christians don't necessarily do this, but are willing to allow others room to worship and believe that they should be left alone as well. Now, in King Ahab and Jezebel's case, once Jezebel demanded and got her way regarding her worship of Baal, she then set out to remove all memory of worship of Jehovah from the land. She did this by bringing 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Ashtoreth from Phoenicia. That's almost 1,000 prophets that she brought to Samaria. She housed them in the palace, fed them in royal style. Their duties would have been to promote the worship of Baal and Ashtoreth throughout the land, the northern kingdom of Israel. Now, this became the politically correct way of looking at religion under King Ahab. He, as king, held the authority and used that authority to push Jehovah to the side, allowing Jezebel to have her way. Political correctness forced people to decide. Now, as you might imagine, this became very difficult for Jehovah's prophets. Some compromised their faith, giving into the treachery of Jezebel under King Ahab's authority. Others sought refuge in a cave and were secretly fed by one of God's other prophets, Obadiah. As we learn, though, only Elijah was willing to go head-to-head with the prophets of Baal to determine who was greater, Baal or Jehovah. Now, as Christians, even though we see what is happening in society, and especially here in America, and we can do our best using every legal means, including voting, to stem the tide, we should also be prepared that things may not go our way. And as things potentially worsen, will you compromise your faith? Well, we're going to continue this next time as we zero in on King Ahab, Jezebel, Elijah, and the contest that brought clarity to the situation, as well as some suicidal thoughts to Elijah. Join me then. Until we meet again, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you are in Him.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.